This podcast is brought to you by Recontract, the leading software to automate your reconditioning process and streamline your entire used vehicle management process. Visit recontract.com to learn more. That's recontract.com.
Want to dive deeper into the topics you hear about on Daily Drive? We're offering listeners a special offer, 20% off a one-year Automotive News digital subscription. That gets you access to all of our news, information, and analysis made for automotive industry leaders like you. Go to autonews.com/dailydrivepromo to redeem. Welcome to Daily Drive for Monday, April 8th, 2024. I'm Jamie Butters, Executive Editor of Automotive News in Detroit.
And I'm Kellen Walker in Las Vegas. Today on the show, used car auction prices keep slipping. Consumer interest in EVs is softening, and Toyota tasks its mini car unit with EV development. Plus, a private equity investor is wary of efforts to decarbonize heavy trucks.
There doesn't seem to be any easy way to electrify trucks today, and it's a little bit of the cold hard truth.
Let's run through all the news you need to know to keep up in the auto industry.
Wholesale auto auctions aren't getting much of a boost this spring, and values are now expected to sag throughout the year. Used vehicle wholesale prices declined slightly on a seasonally adjusted basis in March from February. That's according to Cox Automotive. The Manheim Used Vehicle Value Index is Cox's measurement of wholesale prices based on transactions at Manheim's U.S. auctions, and it's adjusted for mix, mileage, and seasonality. It fell to 203.1 in March, down 0.4% from February, Cox said. Prices also are down nearly 15% from March 2023, Cox said. Cox now expects wholesale prices to end December down 0.7% from a year earlier. It previously projected an increase of 0.5%. Cox chief economist Jonathan Smoke said the expected spring bump was muted this year, but after 4 years of market turmoil, he called it, quote, the most normal pattern we've seen in some time.
The number of consumers who are considering an electric vehicle appears to be shrinking, according to two new surveys. Nearly a quarter of car shoppers, 23%, said they dislike EVs, according to an Edmunds survey fielded in January. A year ago, 19% said they disliked EVs. Automotive research firm J.D. Power is also seeing declining interest. The percentage of consumers who said they are very likely to consider an EV for their next car declined in February for the fourth straight month to 24%, according to J.D. Power. The share of consumers who said they are very unlikely to consider an EV rose to 22%. From about 19% a year earlier.
Toyota's troubled mini car maker Daihatsu will dive into electric vehicles as part of a corporate makeover that may give Toyota an inside line on low-cost compact EVs for global markets. In announcing a new overhauled corporate policy on Monday, newly installed President Masahiro Inoue said Daihatsu will take on the challenge of mini vehicle BEVs as part of the reform. The automaker's suspended development of mini EVs for commercial use when it became embroiled last year in an embarrassing safety scandal that tarnished the brand and forced production to be suspended. It will resume after reforms are implemented, Inoue said. Toyota's mini car unit is behind Japanese rivals such as Nissan, Mitsubishi, and Honda in developing all electrics for the domestic market, where the mini car segment is highly popular.
Workers at a Mercedes-Benz assembly plant in Vance, Alabama, filed a petition with U.S. regulators to hold an election to join the UAW. The union announced the filing on Friday. The SUV plant is the second German-owned U.S. assembly plant in recent weeks to see an election petition filed with the National Labor Relations Board. Workers at Volkswagen's plant in Chattanooga will vote next week. The UAW said, a quote, supermajority of the more than 5,000 eligible Mercedes workers at the Alabama plant signed cards to join the union. The UAW hopes for a vote by early May. And those are today's headlines. Jamie, the number of consumers who are considering EVs appears to be shrinking. Are these consumers that are more interested in hybrids and plug-in hybrids since automakers are starting to offer more of them?
Yeah, that could be. You know, the automakers have been seeing less demand for EVs than they had originally projected. I think consumers have become a lot more aware of some of the challenges and limitations of EVs, the public charging in particular, and various concerns around that. So if they were interested in EVs and now they're a little less so, they might still want something that's going to be easier on the environment, maybe something, a partial step like a hybrid or a plug-in hybrid, where you can, you know, get a lot of the carbon reduction, get a lot of the fuel savings, but not have quite the same range anxiety.
Gotcha. Coming up, a look at why long-haul trucks are challenging for batteries or for hydrogen. That's next on Daily Drive.
The EPA has finalized its tailpipe emissions rule. The agency now projects that battery electric vehicles will account for 30 to 56% of new light-duty vehicle sales in the 2030 to 2032 model years. We want to hear from you.
What do you think of the new rule? How will it affect your business? Send us a voicemail, text, or email. You might hear your comment on this week's Weekend Drive episode. Here's how you can get in touch.
Call us and leave a voicemail or text us at 313-444-2774. Again, that's 313-444-2774. You can also record your voice on your smartphone and send it to dailydrive@autonews.com. That's dailydrive, one word, at autonews.com.
And tune in to our Weekend Drive episode, available Saturday morning.
Managing your used inventory is not exclusive to one person or one part of the dealership. What does the communication look like between sales and service? Are your vehicles getting passed from trade-in to recon with no hiccups? What is your average cycle time to get a used car frontline ready? There is a lot to keep track of all at once. Right now, you could be experiencing three major issues with your recon information causing process breakdowns. One, lack of visibility into recon pricing to inform the appraisal process. Two, no access to that appraisal information when working through recon approvals. Three, missed information and process bottlenecks trying to manage a vehicle across multiple systems and tools. Full insight throughout your entire process is crucial to making your used car department the most efficient and profitable it can be. Recontract combined with AutoVision creates an end-to-end tool for your used car department to address these breakdowns. With access to live appraisal information and reconditioning approvals, you get a single view of every vehicle with all the data you need right in one place. Make more educated decisions on your used car inventory faster with all your data easily accessible at any stage. Visit info.recontract.com/autovision for more information. That's info.recontract.com/autovision.
Welcome back to Daily Drive. I'm Jamie Butters with Kellen Walker. Companies and governments are looking for ways to decarbonize long-haul trucking fleets, which are significant sources of emissions. But Shane Natarajan of Mobility Impact Partners explains that battery power and hydrogen both present significant challenges to large-scale implementation. She spoke with Automotive News Tech and Innovation team leader Pete Bigelow on Shift, a podcast about mobility. Here's part of their conversation.
With trucking fleets, the infrastructure uncertainty part of it is magnified, right? Truck batteries are very, very large. They take a long time to charge, even at very high charging speeds. And if you have a fleet of trucks, you need, you know, significant grid distribution and transmission capacity. The problem is we haven't really found a solution that can quickly allow for, you know, sufficient grid upgrades to support, you know, a fleet of like dozens of class 7 and 8 trucks. That just doesn't exist. Grid capacity increase is old school. First of all, you need to make sure you have the right generation capacity, which, you know, let's assume for a second that is there. Many cases, in some cases it's not, I should say, but let's assume for a second you don't need to build up another power plant. then you need to have enough transmission capacity. Assuming you have the right transmission capacity, now you need distribution capacity, and you need to think about things like transformers, you need to think about things like new wiring. And, you know, we've heard that it can take anywhere from 6 months to 24 months in the US and Europe to successfully upgrade a site with enough distribution capacity, and it can take many millions of dollars. And so this is not an easy endeavor. There are no easy solutions. By the way, if any startup is solving for this, please let us know. But we haven't seen these solutions in the market. And so I think that is really a huge limiter for truck decarbonization. And it's a little bit of a immovable object versus infinite force sort of thing, right? It's
I feel like you just made a very strong case for hydrogen fuel cells and trucks.
I think hydrogen comes with its own problems. So actually, let me close the topic on truck fleets. Now, that doesn't mean you cannot decarbonize any truck fleet. It just means you need to have a very incremental approach. You can only, you know, successfully decarbonize or electrify truck fleets, I should say, that number one, have enough time in the day to charge. So basically, you could only successfully do it for short and medium haul that have several hours in the day where they're actually loading and unloading stuff. So you can actually use a lower power charger. Second, you can only do it in a long routes that are known because you need charging infrastructure on those routes. Third, you can only do it in areas where you have access to enough grid capacity, which you have to plan this out, right? And fourth, you can really only do it in areas where there are significant subsidies for trucks. Unlike passenger cars, class 7 and 8 trucks still have a ways to go in to reach price parity. They are at price parity with internal combustion engine trucks when you consider subsidies, when you consider subsidies in California and Europe. But if you take away those subsidies, they're still more expensive. And we will see that price drop start to come down as batteries, you know, continue to get cheaper. Their cattle, I don't know if you saw, recently announced a $56 per kilowatt hour LFP battery. NMC batteries are expected to reach $100 per kilowatt hour anytime between 2025 and 2028, depending on which projection you look at. And so I'm optimistic about the prices of class 7 and 8 electric trucks coming down without subsidies, but all of these other factors still remain. And, you know, we think that an incremental approach is needed. In fact, we're going to be spending some time thinking about this space in the near future as well, but there doesn't seem to be any easy way to electrify trucks today. And it's a little bit of the cold hard truth. It doesn't mean that it's impossible. It means that more creative solutions are needed. I should also say, by the way, if you are able to electrify trucks, it's very, very beneficial. The dollar per mile of an electric truck is significantly lower in terms of a dollar per mile for a internal combustion engine truck. So there's very good reasons to do this. But the big question that people who are trying to solve this need to ask themselves is, can I electrify trucks for the businesses who are my customers without changing the fundamentals of their business, right? A lot of trucking fleets, you know, their fundamental business is built on infinite flexibility. I will go wherever, you know, you need me to deliver a load, right? And you're actually taking away that flexibility from them significantly when you have all of these constraints. And so you have to look for businesses where you can accommodate those types of duty cycles and so on. And so
we talked about uncertainty in the passenger vehicle market. And from a business perspective, uncertainty seems to be the one thing I don't want would be
exactly
uncertainty.
Exactly. Right. And that's not to say, you know, there are certain businesses that you can electrify with minimal uncertainty. Like delivery vans are a great example. You see delivery van fleets electrifying all over the place. And that's because they lose very little of their operational flexibility and capability and performance when they electrify. That uncertainty increases the larger vehicles get, essentially. A lot of it is really driven by the size of the battery and the amount of time it takes for the battery to charge and the power needed, the sort of fast charging power needed to charge these batteries. And so when you're looking at class 7 to 8 truck fleets, that's the extreme end of, you know, uncertainty, right? And so, yeah, I think you put it really well. Businesses really face uncertainty, I think, you know, much more fundamentally, right, than passengers, because their livelihood is sort of dependent on that.
So hydrogen, right? Like, that's the solution?
Jury's still out. Okay, I'll tell you why. So number one is just the infrastructure required for hydrogen. And number two is, you know, the jury's out in terms of decarbonization as well. So for today, 70 to 80% of the cost of hydrogen is due to infrastructure. Cost of hydrogen is very high. It is difficult to build hydrogen infrastructure. It is difficult to scale hydrogen infrastructure. Hydrogen is a very light gas. The molecules are very small. It escapes more easily. You need sort of leak-proof piping, and that's more difficult to do than laying electrical cables, right? So you need to compress and maintain compressed pressure to transport hydrogen from one place to the other. You need to, you know, there's obviously the piping piece I told you about. And today there aren't really any hydrogen refilling stations in the US. You'll have to build that ecosystem from scratch. That's going to take time to build. I don't think that's going to be overnight. I'm not sure how long it's going to take to build. You know, my uninformed hypothesis is to say at least 5 years, 5 to 10, if not more.
Well, I think I've got a startup that you should look at that one of us should found. I don't even know if it's out there, but there should be some sort of mobile refueling for hydrogen, and then we don't have to wait for the infrastructure.
Yeah, actually, that's a great idea. If you can do it at low enough costs, I think that could really be something. Now, the problem is you have to time it with enough demand for your services. And I think that's the hard part as well. And you have to scale it, which is another thing. But let's go back to the second issue with hydrogen. Hydrogen actually has several times the heat trapping capacity of carbon dioxide. And it also leaks much more easily. So from a sort of heat trapping and greenhouse gas perspective, hydrogen is actually worse than carbon dioxide. So this is something to keep in mind. There's, again, it's a little bit of a fundamental problem. Now, one could say theoretically, if I had sort of bulletproof infrastructure and tanks and storage and so on for hydrogen, this wouldn't be a problem. But like I said, it's a gas that leaks very easily, and it's hard to detect hydrogen leaks.
Shay Natarajan is a partner at Mobility Impact Partners. She spoke with Pete Bigelow on Shift, a podcast about mobility. You can find their entire conversation wherever you get your podcasts. That's Daily Drive for today. I'm Jamie Butters.
And I'm Kellen Walker. Thanks to Automotive News staffers CJ Moore, Hannah Lutz, and Hans Greimel for their reporting for today's podcast. You can get the latest news on EV adoption, used vehicle pricing, and everything happening in the auto industry at autonews.com.
Come back tomorrow for my interview with Rick Wainschel, VP of Data Science at Cloud Theory.
So the 2024s are starting to flow in, but the 2023s are still there and still having to have those aggressive incentives, aggressive pricing actions taken in order to work through that inventory and make room for the 2024s.
We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the show and the topics we covered today. Send us an email at dailydrive@autonews.com or leave us a voicemail at 313-444-2774. And if you enjoy the podcast, remember to like, leave a review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.